This is 16 to 1, a podcast about education, teaching, and learning.
What's up, girl?
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going pretty well, I would say.
Where are we in our quarantine?
What day is it?
It's Wednesday.
This year, the year of our Lord.
We're recording this the day before we release it this time because time doesn't exist in the quarantine and we forgot when
it
was.
The only way that Chelsea knows what day it is if she has her Monday meeting.
Right, my Monday meeting.
And that's it.
That's it. That's all we need.
I actually don't know how long we've been doing this. How many weeks? Let's think. 8 million.
8 million.
Roughly. No, I'm actually curious. This is week 9.
Okay.
So this would have been my seniors fun week. Today would have been the senior trip. We're going to go to a trampoline park.
That would have been fun.
I was kind of excited about
that. One of the first things closed, though, I remember.
Was it?
Trampoline parks in general, pretty specifically.
They're very
out.
Dangerous. We were going to do that instead of take them to the amusement park. But anyways.
We were going
to
put them in danger instead of let them have fun.
Well, I mean, the other option was ride roller coasters, which I would consider another sort of.
Those are also dangerous.
Yeah. So that would have been this week. Graduation is Saturday. So it's like weird end of year stuff.
What are you doing for your graduation?
We're having a drive through.
Interesting. I bet there's some weird logistics involved in that we don't need to go into, but
yeah,
I'm glad you're doing something. I'm glad you're able to do something for the kids.
We're having like a videographer record it and put together a video for the kids. So I think that'll be cool for them to look back at.
Yeah. It's not going to be what they
the most of it.
Right. There's really nothing anybody can do.
No. There's no perfect scenario. There's no.
Hello.
I was trying to see what he's doing. Very interested in the neighbor's habits now. This is what quarantine has done to me. I watched the squirrels.
He is staring out the window at the squirrels and our neighbor. Anyway, so it's Wednesday morning. What are we drinking?
I'm drinking Diet Coke.
I'm drinking coffee
Coke
and water. Zero. Coffee and water for me.
I could use some water.
We're drinking this right now because we drank other things last night.
We had a fire.
The good kind that's in the pit. Not the bad kind that burns your house down.
Anyways.
Yeah, I had whiskey. You had beer.
Coors Light. Brought to you by Coors Light. Straight out of the Rockies.
Really, we really need to get them to sponsor us. So what have we been doing to pass the time recently?
We've been watching an unhealthy amount of TV.
Yeah.
First of all.
Yes.
I have the perfect segue. This is going to be very smooth. But
okay.
First of all, we've been watching TV. We watched some very good TV.
Mm-hmm.
We watched Outer Banks on Netflix. We like that. We just finished the first season of Ozark, which I like, but it's very violent, not kid-friendly. And we've just been watching a lot of things in between, but we've also been, for the topic of this week's show, we've been playing video games.
Lots of them.
This week has been Animal Crossing.
We finally gave in and got Animal Crossing. I'm not sure how I feel about it, because it's just like real life, where you go in debt to buy things and then work your way.
But this debt in the game is much more manageable than real life debt. It gets paid off much quicker.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
I guess so.
This week, we're actually talking about esports in schools.
Esports.
And this kind of came up because, well, our last episode was about the coronavirus, which, like, wasn't super fun, obviously, to talk about. But esports in schools is kind of exciting this week because the high school I teach at, we just, this past year, we had our first year of esports teams.
Mm-hmm.
Their season was cut short, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But we have them.
Mm-hmm.
And also because it's been something that we've been seeing a lot of people doing in the quarantine to help with isolation and boredom and frustration and all the feelings that we're all feeling as we get into this.
It's a thing that you can do to be kind of semi-social in a digital way and, play with friends. And it's a nice way to just... I don't know. We have a lot of streamers that we watch, and we'll get to what that is. But we know about this world because we participate as consumers of it.
Right.
So we're kind of a fan of the concept. So just for people who don't know, what is esports?
Esports are just online, usually competitive. And in the case of esports, when we're talking about it at like a high school level, it is a competitive gaming. And it's either on a computer or a console.
So video games.
Mm-hmm. but you're competing against other people. Other schools, yeah, with other leagues and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, and it's based on a variety of games, but our school this past year just got the funding. The funding is what most schools are needing because the computers to run these are not cheap.
Yeah, you gotta have a graphics card the size of a hoverboard, basically, to run these things at a competitive level. And you've got to have internet infrastructure in place to support it because you need bandwidth.
Well, and you also like literally have to have a space to put it because it has to be in a secure place, you know, a secure place where it can be locked and taken care of where other kids can't, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So you need a physical plant. You need all this computer equipment. You need headsets and fancy keyboards. Mm-hmm. I just got a gaming keyboard myself.
Yeah.
It lights up. It's really exciting.
So it's expensive on the front end, but kind of what my research, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, but once you have that cost, the teams don't travel or anything like that. So the cost is just in that first thing, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Because, like the stereotype, you might imagine, it does involve a lot of sitting in a basement by yourself. And
our kids aren't in a basement at the school.
Well, okay. So. All right. Good for them. I'm glad they graduated from the basement.
So is it a sport? That's the first question.
Yeah. We were excited to cover this topic because we like gaming and esports and we're nerds and we grew up playing video games that are kind of have grown to define the genre of competitive esports. There is a lot of debate over whether or not this should be called a sport. I think it is tricky. I'm not sure if I'm completely satisfied with the answer of yes, even though I'm happy to call it a sport. I'm not sure it completely satisfies my mind's definition of what sports are, just because I imagine, you know, like running around outside basically or in a gym for the thing to be a sport. But it's been considered enough of a sport for the International Olympic Committee to have a conversation about it in 2017. Again, a lot of this has to do with they have to acknowledge how popular it is. It's a hugely popular form of entertainment right now. It's becoming more so. Competitive esports and gaming are just, and streaming connected to it are just exploding in popularity right now. So the Olympic Committee is like, well, I guess we're going to have to acknowledge that this thing is here to stay and that they acknowledge that it can be considered a sporting activity. They said the players involved prepare and train with an intensity which may be comparable to athletes in traditional sports. So they're considering what games that might be suitable for Olympic competition. So it's at least on the radar of the International Olympic Committee. I don't know if that's the standard that you have to pass to be really considered. Like, I mean, who gets to define
the IOC?
Really
isn't really a great, you know, place to have to go to. I don't know. They're problematic.
Well, they are. So. They are, but it's at least, it's a well-known international, like, it's a regulatory body. And that's kind of the thing with esports, that they're grappling for legitimacy in a lot of different ways. And one of the ways is that there aren't international or even sometimes national regulatory bodies to manage leagues and competitions and rules and things like that. So it's a little less structured than what we might consider a lot of professional sports to be, but it's gaining, it's taking on a lot of that structure.
Well,
as
long as softball isn't an Olympic sport, an event, I have no interest in talking about the IOC. Don't get me started.
I'm sorry.
Anyways.
I'm really sorry about that. Yeah. Anyway, just for those who might be wondering how in the heck could this possibly be considered a sport, it requires a lot of hand-eye coordination and a kind of an alacrity of that stuff. And it also is a very social thing most of the time. So a lot of these games, and we'll talk about some examples of games and stuff, but a lot of these games require teamwork, a lot of teamwork and coordination and communication. But it is a sort of also a physical event. A lot of these professional gamers that we know of get their wrists get worn out and stuff because they, you know, either mashing controllers or keyboards and mouse just constantly, such that they
types of injuries are no different than someone who works at a computer all day who has you know,
they get
wrist,
carpal tunnel
exactly.
Or you know, repetitive stress injuries and
so,
things like that.
It's a similar sort of vein of
but just to explain a little bit how it is kind of physical, it's right now we're seeing in the competitive esports space really young competitors winning things
big,
because the younger you are, the quicker your reflexes with these kinds of things. And so it's really funny because the slightly older gamers, they don't have that edge that the younger gamers do. So we're seeing pretty young, you know, like 15, 16 year olds winning worldwide competitions in gaming because they're just, I mean, it's also all they do all day, but
we're going to talk about that too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These, I have a hard time calling some of these professional streamers, like the people who do this for their jobs, as professional athletes, although I know that like they're professional gamers, but they're also entertainers. And so this content creation is a huge side of all of their business. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's half the business for most of them. Like even when we're talking about like these really big competitive players, half of their job isn't just playing the game. It's also,
I would say that there are two sides to the coin of esports in the public's eye. It really is what you're talking about, content creation and then the competitive side. A lot of people kind of focus on one or the other. You're either all in on the competitive aspect or you're all in on the content creation side and you kind of dabble in the competitive side. But usually it's kind of one or the other is your focus because it requires such a grind to really be competitive.
Well, and they're similar to athletes, you know, normal physical athletes isn't like NFL and MLB and things like that, because these people are getting paid to post ads. They're getting paid to share, you know, stories and things like that, testimonials about a product. And it's that's exactly what's happening to the people that we watch who stream.
Right. They have managers like traditional, you know.
Yeah.
Like
so they're
star.
Treated just like, and you know, a normal sports athlete as far as coverage and things like that. Like they get invited to events. A bunch of the streamers we watch were, you know, taken to the Super Bowl. So they're treated just like any other
big entertainer.
Yeah, would be.
Right.
It's just that their medium is a little bit different.
It's different. It's new. It's evolving. There's a lot that's really interesting that's happening in this space.
Yeah, so let's talk about it at the high school level, kind of what's happening there. My coworker, and then one of our tech guys is in charge of our esports teams. We have four different groups right now. So there are a lot of esports titles that could be played, but right now at my high school, there are only four. But for anyone who knows anything about the game side of it, most of them are like Fortnite, League of Legends, Overwatch, PUBG, Counter-Strike Global Offensive, Rocket League, Call of Duty, Super Smash Bros., Minecraft, NBA 2K, Madden. Those are the games that most people have a league for or a team for. But my high school, we only have four right now. Four games. I think it's Fortnite and Overwatch. We have like a JV and a varsity team. We have one Rocket League team, and we might actually have two Smash Brothers teams, but still. So we've got almost 20 kids involved, which is basically the size of a roster of a varsity league anyways, or for most teams. And so they practice after school and do all that kind of stuff. But what we've seen happen, like historically, is that, like what Chelsea was saying, that these young teens are competing at even huge, I mean, world levels of these gaming things and winning millions of dollars. So there's been a push to incorporate it into high school as a way to kind of formalize it, I guess I would say. And it also helps bridge a gap because now college teams exist. And so there are colleges that put students on scholarships to go to their school, earn a degree, and play video games and to compete for them. So before, I think, especially when, like, I mean, we're 30. So when we were growing up, it was like the height of, like, you can't sit at home and play video games all day. And like now there are people much younger than us, much more successful than us, you know what I mean, making tons more money than we are by sitting home and playing video games every day.
Yeah.
And so now we're seeing like almost like a real transition that could happen for students who have an interest in this.
I think we're changing the image of gaming. Yeah.
Right. Like they can go from a high school team to a college team where they might get a degree for free to then be, you know, used or whatever in a professional organization or team. And that's a real path for people. Yeah. And it's much more likely, statistically speaking, to do that than it is still to become a professional athlete in like the majors as far as like basketball or baseball.
And I think part of the strength of looking at gaming as a profession is that because of this content creation side that we were talking about earlier, you don't necessarily have to even win to be wildly popular. Some of our favorite streamers are not at all. In fact, they're usually not winners in these competitive spaces, but they still have, you know, millions and millions of followers. Some of these world competitive leagues will have their finals or whatever, the final series in huge stadiums. Yep. And just like thousands and thousands of people go and watch these things.
Tennis stadiums they use for them.
So it's kind of interesting because this this, like you were saying, this thing we used to, it was kind of pejorative, you know, oh, okay, you're just, you can't make a living sitting playing video games. Now you can make a living sitting yeah. playing video games. And because esports is becoming more codified, like we were talking about, like these things are kind of becoming more serious about organization and such, you can, there is a spelled out career path that somebody can take from high school all the way through,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you're talking about, you can get college scholarships. You can become pro. You might join an organization. Some of these, they're big gaming. They're kind of like entertainment management organizations mm-hmm. slash. It's kind of weird. They like sometimes there's housing involved mm-hmm. with these orgs. They'll put all their gamers in a house together, and yeah. that's where you live and work. And it's really intense. You know, we're talking about Rogue, FaZe, 100 Thieves. If you've heard of any of these, these are. Professional
these are the
organizations.
Big ones.
Yeah, these are professional organizations that manage the talent, and the talent in this case are people who play video games mm-hmm. and stream their playing live to thousands and thousands and sometimes millions of viewers.
Can I say the one cool thing about seeing this happen in my high school has been the group of kids who play, we have like varsity athletes of other sports. We have kids that I haven't really seen take an interest or be proactive in the high school setting in any sort of way that like a group represented them. And so it's so cool to see these kids work together and get to know each other and get to play together, because it brings kids together that would have otherwise not had a common, you know what I mean, like factor mm-hmm. or something mm-hmm. like that. Like the kids that I've seen talk in the hallways about whatever practice they had after school, I was like, we are doing opposite things. You know what I mean? Like, they were never kids I would have paired up as friends or anything like that, just based on the groups and things like that. So I love seeing the esports teams because it's forcing all kinds of kids to work together yeah. at something they all love and are very good at, and but they have to yeah. find a way to do it.
It's fun that it takes an otherwise solitary activity, because you mostly can sit alone by yourself,
yeah.
isolated. It takes an otherwise solitary activity and turns it into a social one when you think of yeah, esports it leagues. Does. It's really interesting, I think, especially for high school. I mean, I read a statistic when we were researching this. It's like something like, I don't know, like 85% of high school boys play games, and like it's really high for girls, like 78 or
yeah,
something.
Yeah,
it's high 70s or something like that. Like, so
kids
are
playing.
Majority of kids are playing video games more or less seriously, but it doesn't really matter. The fact is, it's out there and everybody's doing it. And this yeah. is a way for those kids who have a real keen interest in it to find like minded students.
Yeah. And I mean, I, on the education side of it, this stuff excites me because I am not an educator who believes that every single student needs to go to college. That is not something that I personally believe. Like, that's not part of, you know, what I preach or anything like that. But I think that these opportunities are going to really open up the doors for some students who might not have previously had an interest in college and can say, oh, hey, like I can do this and learn, you know, computer design or graphics or, you know what I mean? Like find a bachelor's that kind of fits this interest while also kind of preparing them for that next level, whatever that may be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to open the door. I think it's going to help colleges have a different sort of recruiting option in one way.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to be more marketable for some students. I think is cool.
Right. I also think there's a close correlation between kids who later develop an interest in STEM stuff.
There's a huge, yeah. That's one of the plugs of
and
this.
Playing
is
video
that.
Games. I mean, that's honestly has a lot to do with why I got into computer science. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do now most of the time professionally. So that's why I got into coding, really, because I grew up playing fun computer games. And I'm like, I want to know how to make this work, how to create what I am consuming.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do video game design, but I'm kind of adjacent to it in what I work with now. So it's like, it gave me an opportunity just playing, getting lost in these games that I grew up with, gave me an opportunity to become interested in the profession that I am now. Mm-hmm. So that's, I mean, I think you're right that colleges are going to look at that as an opportunity to channel
mm-hmm.
kids into programs.
Well, and for students that, I have a lot of kids who stream, and so like if your kid or your students are talking about like Mixer or Twitch or YouTube gaming
yeah.
or Facebook game, like that's what they're talking about. They're talking about being on a platform, sharing their gameplay with others who can watch and participate in it.
Yeah, just so our listeners, if you're not aware, can you talk, we'll just say what streaming is. We keep talking about streaming, but it's a little
Yeah, bit. So it's the sharing of your gameplay. It's a way to broadcast what you're doing, maybe even a video, you know, a live video stream of what you are doing and talking as you're playing, whatever. And so it allows viewers to then see exactly what's happening in your gameplay in real time normally. And there's usually a chat option, so that kind of gives them an opportunity to talk with the people who are viewing them. A lot of the streamers today that Chelsea and I watch, and that we've come to just enjoy watching just for entertainment even, did not go the normal route that I think that maybe it's becoming, which is like
some because it didn't exist yet.
Right. But yeah. I'm even saying, like, of those guys, like I can only really think of one that I know for sure has a college degree. But that's because streaming is something you can start at 16 and just grow into. And so I think what these college opportunities, what these high school opportunities, they're gonna kind of help solidify, you know, some potential for these students mm-hmm. as far as like, hey, if streaming doesn't take off, I mean, because it's a luck thing, right? To become a famous streamer is just an absolute act of luck. What else do I have?
But yeah, the thing, though, I do want to mention about it is that you don't have to be a mega famous streamer to make a living doing
no,
it.
No, you don't.
I have a friend who maybe has, you know, hundreds of viewers on his stream whenever he streams, mm-hmm. Maybe 1,000, something like that. And he's doing it full time. He's making a living yeah. with whatever, you know.
Right.
So it's not even something that you have to become hugely popular at to make a living doing.
No,
now, it is difficult. It's a grind. Everyone's chasing after all those views, but it's possible that it can be a career even without wild
popularity. I guess
popularity.
More where I was going with that was like, I've had a few parents come into parent teacher conferences and be like, they want to be a streamer. Mm-hmm. And like, how do I support that? And these are parents who probably would have considered a 4-year college option.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess on my end, a lot of the kids that I've had the chat with the parents about, it's been, oh, they can go to school and maybe get a partial scholarship or full scholarship. And so in the parents' head, it's a more, you and I mean, like, formal way
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
of achieving adulthood, I guess I would say,
yeah.
because it follows the steps. It follows the formula that so many people believe is how we should achieve it.
And I think, I know I was talking about STEM and computer science and stuff like that, but I don't think it's even necessary to go that route in the college, because like you could even do like communications
and
or
business,
theater
yes.
or business
yeah.
or any of these things are adjacent to mm-hmm. the career of streaming, because you have to be entertaining, you know.
Yeah.
If you want to, maybe that's the best way if you want to become a professional streamer, is to become a better entertainer. So
yeah.
go for, you know, theater or communications or something like that, because you have to grab people's attention.
Sure.
Or like, yeah, like you were saying, like business.
Mm-hmm.
Again, obviously some of the technology stuff, but there are a lot of options that studying in college in a formal way could help you become a better,
even if that is your end goal.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you don't even have to, like I was saying earlier, you don't even have to win in the competitive space.
No.
You can be actually terrible in the competitive space and still be a wildly popular
streamer. Yeah.
And
I think that's kind of exciting. I think it's really, if we compare that conversation to the one that surrounds professional athletes, it's always like, oh, so-and-so is great, but they never won a ring. And so that isn't necessarily the formula or how it can be perceived in the world of gaming, because we know plenty of streamers who haven't really won anything of great, you know, whatever, money value or interest. And they're still incredible at their job and they're still great players. So it's kind of fun to see that conversation surrounding it sort of evolve over time. But I guess on the education side of it, I'm just excited to see an opportunity for kids with interests that are different. You know, like I think high schools and other schools have kind of become so just formulaic in what they offer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there are only so many sports. There are only so, you know, but this opportunity will keep growing and evolving. Video games are not going anywhere. So there is going to, as long as there are video games, there's going to keep being a growth in this interest,
yeah.
I think.
There are billions and billions of dollars in this industry.
Yeah, and I mean, we're even talking about something that someday when Fortnite isn't played competitively, something will replace it. It's going to just keep evolving. So
mm-hmm.
it's not going to go anywhere.
Uh-huh. So there are concerns with the concept. And
yeah.
we've talked about some of them. I mean, a big one is just overcoming this sort of default position that we know from time immemorial that says that playing video games is a waste of time,
yeah.
or that you're lazy if you play video games.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, another thing we're seeing is like screen time debates are
mm-hmm.
a big issue, especially for younger people.
Yeah.
And this streaming video game phenomenon. There's definitely a balance to be had. You can't kind of forego all other.
Oh, I mean, I had a play, you know, I had my Super Nintendo, I had my games, and there would still be days my dad would, or mom, whoever was home and around, would just be like, it's nice outside, go outside. Right. And like, I was like, okay, you know, so I'm not supporting the idea that you should just sit in a room and play video games. But I do think that there are some payoffs, right? Like, there are some good things that come from it. But I think, especially for teenagers, you just have to find a way to maintain the work. Like, for them, like, they have to know a schedule. If whoever's at home with them says, if long as you have these grades, or if you have your homework done, you know, like, then it can be kind of used then that way. But I know, and we've seen this all the time, whenever there's a new update to a game or a new game comes out, there are certain kids that aren't there because they're allowed to stay home and play whatever the game
is.
That's
a little rough.
But that's no different than anything else kids skip for, so.
I do think one other thing that's a little bit problematic in the space is that there's a huge gender imbalance in the competitive space and even the streaming space. I know of one streamer, a woman, who isn't there to just present her body as an object of attention on stream. That's not to say there aren't many, many more. There are, but right. I only know of one that I can watch who isn't, I mean, I don't know if we can use the word.
It's a tough one.
They call themselves titty streamers.
Yeah.
Because it's just, that's what they're there. They acknowledge that they're there for men to look at their bodies. And it's really, for me, really depressing. And it, like, almost all the streamers that we watch are men, and they don't even play with women most of the time because of even perceived issues of them having some sort of weird relationship with women. So that space needs a huge overhaul in that department. And I have often even been like, you know what, I should just stream so that people can have an example of a woman streaming who is not there to present herself as something that men can ogle. It's just, it's really weird, and I wish we could make more progress on that front. Yeah. So like, you know, encourage your kids, especially if they are young women, to participate in this stuff. There's nothing, I mean, if that's what they want to do, prop them up, you know, in any way that you can, and just tell them that they don't need to be just an object of.
Well, you really went that way, didn't you?
I really.
You really got on that soapbox today. It's not easy to navigate, and it's a harder area of entertainment for women to break into than it is for men.
Absolutely.
And so I think that's really the bottom line here, but I'm not trying to, you know, break. I don't know if this is something we can solve, unfortunately.
No, I don't think it can be solved overnight. I think the only way to do it is to make sure, like, especially as educators, especially if you have an esports league in your school, you got to be really cognizant of making sure the young women who want to participate in this can and feel accepted doing so, and are not being targeted for harassment and all kinds of things. It requires a special attention.
It does.
Yeah.
But I guess in high schools, the first step is establishing it and having it. And from there, we can try to work out the, you know, the rest of it. But I think the most important thing is for high schools to see this as a great opportunity for kids. And I think that's, yeah. I mean, I know what you mean, but
I think we kind of need to change the dialogue about it still, because I think video games are still looked down upon, which is, I mean, and again, like, I understand some of the concerns, but as we've said, this is becoming a more and more social activity.
It is.
It's becoming a way for kids to get together.
Well, and that's some of the strengths of it. And that's exactly, right. I guess, kind of why we wanted to do this episode now, is because, you know, I've been reading online about how people who are suffering from anxiety and depression and things like that because of the coronavirus, these things are heightened because of they're being isolated. And so video games are a way to escape the reality, right? Like, that's why there are nights when Chelsea and I will play games for an entire night and we'll get done playing and I had a great time, and then I'll be like, oh, I could have done laundry. So, like, I still have this, like, tinge of guilt where I'm like, oh, I just use all this time to play this game. But it's so nice to have something that kind of just removes you from the imminent whatever of the current world and just allows you to be whatever. For me, it's something I enjoy. And so I know for people, especially those suffering right now, I've read and heard from my friends and seen online posts and things like that, that video games and, like, the connections that they have in these online communities have been a great way for them to stay connected and to stay involved and to keep their brains busy. While we can have the conversation of like, oh, go outside and do something, or like, if you just play video games, you're lazy, like, it's actually doing a lot of good for people, especially during a time where we can't physically be together mm-hmm. so often. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's kind of my soapbox. It's just like, some people use it as a way to connect and to have social mm-hmm. interactions and, mm-hmm. you know. And so I think a lot of times it's like, oh, well, they're just down there alone, whatever. And it's like, well, they're probably not. Like,
right.
There aren't that many games that we even watch be streamed that are intended to only be one player.
Right.
Most of the games that these, my students and stuff like that are interested in are games they have to collaborate or right. can if they choose to.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot to be said for the processing and things like that that happen in video games. Like, currently Chelsea is obsessed with the newest Zelda game, and it is filled with puzzles. And it takes some real thought to get some of these things, like, in ways that, like, I haven't even had to think about achieving, you know, or completing some of the missions. So they aren't just push the button, watch the thing go, because that's a thing I think you hear a lot, too. Mm-hmm. The storylines yeah. are just as intricate and delicate as books a lot of times.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of why I, like, I grew up playing all these kind of open world RPGs, role-playing games. They're kind of like a video game version of a D&D campaign or something like that. They let you make choices for your character. Sometimes mm-hmm. those choices impact your entire gameplay all the way through, and there's a lot of exploring and solving and figuring and finding, and that's not quite the kind of game that we're talking about with these competitive esports, but I just think that I'm happy to change the perception around video games, because a lot of these at least when we were growing up, a lot of the kids who were really into video games were kind of perceived to be social outcasts mm-hmm. and pariahs. And I mean, I know that I was on the nerdy side growing up, so playing video games was not necessarily something that you would show off like a badge of honor. But now it is becoming exactly that because yeah. of the popularity of
for sure.
these streamers. So yeah, you were talking about this is a way to stay connected, especially during pandemic. There's an interesting article in the New York Times a couple of days ago about one of our favorite streamers is Dr. Lupo, who was mentioned in it, interviewed for it, and it was talking about how this seems to be a pandemic proof career where most of the world economy is kind of grinding and struggling right now. The streaming is completely safe and even experiencing an uptick because everybody's
yeah.
inside and all you can do is consume entertainment, mm-hmm. you know. So they're
I think so. That, I can't remember what article it was. One of the articles I read said that I think in the month of April, people had played Fortnite for like 300 million hours, something like that.
Sounds about right.
So we're talking about something though that like, you know, is kind of untouchable in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be an interest. It's always going to be growing and changing and evolving. It's going to keep changing with us. So when, you know, a lot of my kids are like, I want to do this. And I'm like, well, figure out how to do it. Like, if you can get in it and you can, you know, find out what that success looks like, you're going to be able to keep a hold of it. Like, yeah. it's out there. So I guess, first of all, we need to start by, you know, eliminating the stigma surrounding video games as something that's someone who's lazy or whatever plays.
Mm-hmm.
But also know that if you are sitting at home playing video games, you have to support your life in other ways as well.
I I'm a big reader, so I honestly believe that playing a good video game is no more of a time waster than reading a good book.
I agree.
They're very different experiences, and they're not to be compared to one another, but it's sometimes maybe it's even a more social activity mm-hmm. like we've been talking about. So I really think that that line of discussion is kind of ill-informed as to yeah. the nature of video
games. But even if you're just sitting at home reading, go take a nice walk. Like, just get outside, you know? Just do something. Like,
right.
I mean, it's not healthy for any of us to not, you know?
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Okay. So last week, our fill in the blank didn't go as planned.
Oh, it didn't. Tell me about that.
No, I want you to tell me about it.
Okay.
Because,
well,
I searched for the answer and was like, this is it. And then.
Right. Oh, so we weren't quite precise enough in the asking of our question is what happened. So we asked the question, in 1892, this American institution became the first to offer correspondence courses. What we should have said, to be more specific, was that this institution was the first U.S. school to organize correspondence courses at the college level, offering full credit for successful completion and using the same rigorous standards as in the classrooms. That's what we were really thinking when we just weren't specific enough in asking the question. So we had in mind the University of Chicago, this extension division founded in 1892 and doing correspondence courses at the college level. But we had a listener write in, and we didn't even say a location. So we had a listener write in, and this was before 1892. This was in founded in 1873.
This is where things got tricky.
Right. This is the Society to Encourage Studies at Home is this institution. It was founded in Boston, and it was the first correspondence school.
That was
in the
1873.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So way before our
whoops.
Yeah, whoops. So the founded in Boston by Anna Elliott Tickner, the Society to Encourage Studies at Home. So if that was the answer that you were thinking of, you were probably more right than we were. So thanks to that listener.
Good job.
For writing in. We'll be more careful about asking our questions in the future and do a little more research on them. So anyway, all right.
It seemed like an obvious answer. And then as it always goes, this is just like a class. Oh, well, yeah. You're also not wrong.
you're more right than we are probably. Yes. So, all right. What's this week's fill in the blank?
This week's fill in the blank is this. How much money did 16-year-old Fortnite player Booga win in the inaugural Fortnite World Cup in 2019?
How much money?
How much money did Booga win?
16-year-old. Competitive player.
Yep. It's a lot of money for a 16-year-old.
It's a lot of money.
Okay. What did we learn this week?
Who wants to go first? You want to go first?
We were driving. I don't remember where we were driving. But I was having a moment where I was staring off deeply at something. And you'd apparently been trying to talk to me, I think. Because, right, you'd, like, broken my vision or whatever was happening in my head as I was consuming this information. And Chelsea was like, what is happening? Like, you weren't listening. And I had just read on a billboard that gorillas sing a happy song or hum during meals. And I was like thinking about that because my friend, I won't name him here, but one of my best friends, he does like a little happy dance when the food comes. And I know other people who do like a little, you know, jig wiggle thing. When the food comes, it's like our, you know, lizard brain taking over to be like, yes, chicken tenders are here. So gorillas do it.
Gorillas.
Yeah. And this
sing
is from.
And hum.
Yeah.
While eating.
Yeah, because they're pleased. And I just identified. No, but Chelsea found me a link to the New Scientist website. This is from 2016, so I doubt they've stopped since then. But they do express contentment with their meals.
Wow.
And they also tell each other it's dinner time, which I just think is so sweet. And there are a couple of examples of singing and humming of gorillas, but I will not play that here.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, but the person who wrote about this said that they don't sing the same one over and over. It seems like they're composing little food songs. So
that's pretty cute.
I was just so, it was one of those things that as I was reading, it just really took over in my head. And so I missed whatever Chelsea was asking me about or whatever we were discussing because I just couldn't stop thinking about it.
I can understand that. It's a pretty disarming fact.
It's so cute, though.
It is cute.
I like it.
The idea of
I
a
like
huge it. Gorilla humming
like
while
just
eating.
Really pleased with his whatever they eat. I don't know, leaves.
I really don't know what
I actually don't
eat,
really know
honestly.
What gorillas eat. I didn't do enough Googling. So that's what I learned this week is that gorillas hum or sing when they're happy and they're eating.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
What you learned is much more practical, and I know that. But I just.
No, no, no.
Sometimes it's just those little nuggets that you weren't looking for that are just so satisfying.
There's no practicality requirement on the what I learned. I mean, mine was very practical. I learned this week how to build a raised garden bed, and I did it.
You sure did.
It's probably a little bit overdone at this point, but a theme of being isolated is that people are doing things like baking bread and gardening and stuff they never had time for. I did all of them. Yeah. We're baking bread, we're gardening. So, yeah, I bought a bunch of lumber.
Didn't cut your fingers off?
No, I used a circular saw. I used a drill, and I made a raised garden bed. We did a lot of backbreaking shoveling to level out a space in the backyard for this.
Some help from my dad, luckily, saved us.
Yes, but we leveled out a space back there, and we filled it with some of our dirt that we had moved, and we're going to get some garden soil.
But it keeps freezing.
It does keep
freezing. Because it's Ohio.
So it's not yet time to really plant things because they'll probably die, but pretty soon we're going to be planting some stuff in these raised garden beds that I learned how to make. I mean, it's really, it's just two layers of squares basically on top of one another. But
I wasn't gonna tell them.
Yeah, it's not a very complicated woodworking project, so anyone can do it, honestly. But
I can't.
Well, it was a lot of fun. I like projects and building things and tinkering, so it was a perfect way for me to keep my mind off of the coronavirus for a little while. So it was a fun project. It was good. I recommend
it. Looks
it
great.
Got the space in the backyard. Yeah, it looks pretty good.
It's very rewarding.
It almost
satisfying.
Looks like I knew what I was doing. Almost.
It really looks like
if you
it.
Don't get too close to it.
Bob Vila. That's what I was thinking of. It's very he would be proud, I'm sure.
So do we have any final thoughts to wrap up for the episode?
The one thing we didn't mention was that these streamers and like other athletes, they're not just sitting there not doing things to help others. And I think that's another view of video games and people who stream and things like that, that they're just sitting in their room taking the money, not whatever, you know? And so I think it's important to mention that almost all of the streamers that I can think of that we watch have done something for charity, and that they'll dedicate specific streams of whatever game to raising money for things that mean a lot to them. So
there are lots of big charity events.
Yeah.
Streaming.
So one of them, Jack Courage Dunlop, just did a big one for the coronavirus, raised a ton of money because his grandmother passed away from it. So he did a big stream for that. And then one of the, I would say probably one of the biggest, was Dr. Lupo's stream. And he always fundraises for St. Jude's Children's Hospitals. Mm-hmm. And he did a 24-hour stream and it raised more than $2 million.
Yeah.
So we do see these people going out of their way to sort of spread positivity and things like that. So I think that's cool as someone who consumes that form of entertainment, because it makes me feel good to know that these are people my students watch, right, and they see them kind of.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we've known of a bunch of, you know, Ninja gives a lot of weight to charity, has matching drives all the time. Mm. That's Tyler Blevins. So these are just ones we watched. Tim the Tatman has
and
contributed.
And Twitch has Guardian
to.
Con is what it was used to be called. And so that was a big thing that they would piece together a different hour. Like streamers would get like a 2-hour block and that would be their Guardian Con time. Mm-hmm. And that was the only time they would stream that day. Mm-hmm. So it would drive viewers to the one channel who was streaming for Guardian Con. And then that would help. You and I mean raise more money for whatever Guardian Con was supporting that year.
I know that even our friends have taken the cue from some of these famous streamers and done charity events of their own. We have a group of friends that every year they do this thing called Extra Life, where they get together and I think they stay up for 24 hours straight, and they have people, friends and family, sponsor them, and they'll just stream, play games together for a charity, raising money for, I can't remember what they picked this year, but just all kinds of different things. It's really fun to see that community give back and to sort of foster a culture of giving back. So, I mean, we keep mentioning Dr. Lupo. Ben Lupo is one of our favorite streamers, and it's really cool to watch that stuff. It's just, they're playing games and streaming like they usually do, but it's, you watch this huge stream of just dollar donations coming in for charities.
Well,
every time.
Like for Lupo's big one, like he partnered up with all of his sponsors and things like that, so that when you donated, you were entered in a raffle to win all types of things. So that's obviously an easy way to get interest into donating. But it's also just done because they know it's right. And so like Ninja, Tyler Blevins, one of the other streamers, one of his big donations was just to a food bank. He's outside of Chicago. And so he's been trying to help with things that are affected by corona, or people affected by coronavirus, to help support food banks, get food to people who need it. So they'll all take on all kinds of, I guess, reasons to help people and to give their time and effort. And so I think it just also kind of changes the narrative of the stereotypes of streamers to know that they're not these people who
gamers.
Just sit there and like they're people who have world interests and care and are compassionate and are willing and things like that. So it I like that as a teacher, because I want my kids watching people who do those types of things.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really cool. I weep a little bit.
Oh,
I get emotional watching big fundraising drives for things happening on streams. So.
Yeah. So the St. Jude's one is just, how do you not want to throw all your money at St. Jude's? So.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, that probably about wraps it up for the week. Any final thoughts?
No, just take care of yourselves. Find something to do. Maybe play a game.
Yeah, maybe try out one of these games that you've always wondered about.
Or watch a really fun stream on Twitch or Mixer or somewhere like that. Maybe find an interest that you didn't know you had, because that's how we got into it. I kept forcing Chelsea to watch some of the streamers I'd been watching, and she got me into some of the games that she'd been playing that I hadn't ever had a real interest in, and that's how we kind of swapped our our gaming interests. Yep. So I would just encourage it. It's a neat community.
And probably going to make some new friends. You're probably going to find some new
and find ways, if you're a teacher, you know, to support kids with these interests. Or if you're a parent, you know, find an easier way, I guess, to navigate this as something good and productive in their life and not just something that keeps them glued to the TV.
Yep.
See you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
Listeners, thanks for supporting 16 to 1.
We're trying to grow our audience, so please check us out at 16to1.com, all spelled out, and tell your friends about the show.
On our website, you can find links to follow us on social media, an archive of all our old episodes, and a contact form where you can get in touch.
Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next show.
Can I please have a bubble machine?